Hello, this is Truth News on the 22nd of September 2010. Welcome Australia, welcome world, to your worst nightmare. I wish it wasn't the case, but the world is really teetering and we're at 1 minute to midnight and closing fast. There's a lot of disturbing developments in world affairs that all seem to have one thing in common, which is the takeover of civil society by a kind of a ruthless governmental bureaucracies that basically use a whole lot of deception to give people the impression that what they're doing is actually for your own good. And we'll be covering some leading stories in that arena tonight. So welcome to the show, and just welcoming aboard Josh Jackson. Are you there?
Once again, Harold, it's always a pleasure to do this on a Thursday. Or is it a Wednesday? It's a Wednesday today.
It's a Wednesday. Indeed, it is a Wednesday. The last show we did was on a Saturday because I teamed up with Canadian Truther Girl, which
that was awesome, which
was a great show. And we even had a bit of live music during that show. I don't know if you caught it, Josh, but we got Lawrence, a colleague of mine, came in and played a song, which was great.
Fantastic.
So we like to get that the ambience happening, but
it's always good to get local talent in on the game.
Indeed.
Now, folks, I mean, you know, we've, Harold, you put it nicely there at the start. We are really teetering on some sort of nightmarish tyranny. The UK government has just come out with this and it's really blown my mind. I mean,
it is. Let's lead with this UK story. Have you got the story up here? UK proposes all paychecks go to the state first.
This is CNBC, folks. We're not making this stuff up.
Indeed. The UK's tax collection agency is putting forth a proposal that all employers send employee paychecks to the government, after which the government would deduct what it deems as the appropriate tax and pay the employees by bank transfer. Oh, it makes sense, doesn't it, Josh?
I mean, that's nice of them.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, honestly, if you get this right, you will be paid by the state. Like everyone will be paid by the state. So if you are an employer, to make sure that everyone gets paid the correct form of tax, as they so nicely put it, the employer sends all the cash to the state first, the state into a big sort of trust account, I'm gathering. Then all the computers figure out what to give you back, and then it gives you back the right amount.
Look, it's just so criminal on so many levels. Look, shall we just play the BBC piece, which I think it just gives a bit of background to the story. And you can see when you listen to this piece that the news readers themselves are almost incredulous. They almost don't believe what they're actually talking, what they're actually saying. And yet it's sort of during the course of the presentation, because they have one of these experts that's brought in, the tenor sort of changes, and then it ends up seeming like, well, that's actually normal now, because the expert says, oh, actually everyone agrees with this and everyone thinks it's a great idea. Meaning who? I mean, who is everyone? Like, it's fascinating, isn't it? So, yeah, let's just let's play this and then we can
let it roll.
We can comment on it.
Let it roll. Bring it on.
Here it is.
But the revenue is consulting on plans that would force employers to hand over all our pay to the government. The revenue would then deduct the tax and then pass on the balance to our bank accounts. Well, with us is Paul Lewis of Radio 4's Moneybox programme. Are they serious?
I'm afraid they are, yes. Here's the paper that actually says, you know, this is improving the operation of PAYE, it's called. It's a consultation paper. The period ends on Thursday, so there's still time to comment. And I must say, talking to accountants and some politicians, they think it's a good idea. They say a lot of the mistakes that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks are actually because employers get things wrong. And if only the revenue is in charge of all of that, then it would be okay. And it also says because information is always done, it's done once a year, so it's always out of date, but the revenue would have what it calls real-time information. Mm-hmm. So if something changed in your circumstances, it could change your tax at once.
So you're saying, Paul, that a lot of people are saying in principle it's quite a sound idea. Who's saying it's not? Is there anyone saying it's not a good idea?
Well, we don't know. We'll see what happens in the consultation. Certainly some Moneybox listeners already emailed us to say, this is going to make us all work for the state. They'll be paid, and then they'll graciously give us a bit of our money back. I think really the important thing is trust, really.
If they
had a history of everything working well,
let's just pause at their trust.
Trust.
Yeah.
And there's time to comment by Thursday. You've still got time.
Oh, you can comment. Yes. Yes,
like,
indeed.
What? You've still got time to comment on something so ridiculously invasive and preposterous. I mean, it literally is one of the most stupendously massive invasion on anybody's personal private life.
Yeah,
I could imagine.
Yeah, and the question of trust is already breached by the fact that they want to do such an invasive, obnoxious thing. You know, the trust is already broken by the intention of the person who drew up that document.
Look, folks, this all goes down to a massive global control grid, an oppressive and authoritarian control grid packed by this new world order to basically take on everybody. It's basically a global surveillance grid packaged in a nice, fun, good way for you. Like, oh, it'll make everyone safer. It'll give everyone more money. It'll, you know, they sort of say the Orwellian opposite thing to what it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, let's consider a couple of aspects of this plan. And I should stress, I've actually now cited the actual PDF document, because when I first saw this story, I couldn't quite believe it.
And you don't believe it. I mean, it's egregious. It's just insane.
Yeah, I thought they must have misrepresented it. I thought maybe they were hyping it up, you know, which would be hard to believe that the BBC would need to do that. But I thought maybe they've misrepresented the story. So I went and I actually found the document, and I found the relevant passage, and I've actually put it here on the Truth News Facebook page, and I found the exact quote, and I'm just rolling down here. Here it is. This is from the government document itself. Under centralized deductions, the employer would send the gross payment through the electronic payment system to a central calculator where the deductions calculated by HMRC would be made automatically. The resulting
automatically, the resulting
net payment would then be sent to the individual's bank account, and the deductions would be paid directly to the government. So there is no doubt that this is what they are actually intending. So don't let anyone tell you that it's not correct, or, you know, this is what they've said in black and white. Now, it's only a proposal at this stage, yes, of course, but Hitler's Mein Kampf was only a proposal when Hitler wrote it, okay? And you know, and what they're planning to do here is much more extreme than anything Hitler did, and I really do mean more extreme. Even though Hitler ended up doing things which are very extreme.
Oh, look, that's Nazis, a bit of an overstatement. I mean, Hitler did the most horrific things.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but let me explain
the
reason
for
saying that.
You're not diminishing his extremist.
No, it's more extreme than anything the Nazis did. It actually is, and I mean in relation to the money supply. I don't mean in relation to concentration camps and extermination and all that.
Right.
I just mean in relation to the actual totalitarian nature of the control that this actually implies. You know what I mean?
It's more scientific now.
Yeah.
See, the whole control grid is more scientific. It's been slowly. I mean, all of this dog training that you've had for years as well. I mean, I'm sort of going away from it. But this whole, you know. When Governor Ridge of in the States 7 years ago he stated that when he was head of Homeland Security that they would have naked body scanners, not just airports, but train stations, bus stops, shopping malls, you know, schools.
Yeah.
And then now, you know, it's slowly coming through.
This sets up a situation where, and again, we have to project into the future here, right? We can't just look at it and with this trust assume that the immense power you're giving to the government by even thinking of this idea, right? By even That's contemplating right. it, the immense power you're prepared to give to the government. When down the track, that the government is behaving in ways which are less trustworthy, that may become more tyrannical, that they'll have this complete power, so that if they don't like you for any reason, you don't get paid. And of course they can do that, and of course they would do that. I mean, I'm sure they would do it in the case of, say, if you owed some fines. Let's say you owned parking fines, or let's say you had a tax problem from a previous year that they discovered. Suddenly they're going to deduct more money from what they pay you.
And it's for your own good, mate. You know, you've got all these fines, and you want to get out of debt, don't you? So we'll do it for you.
Yeah, indeed, and of course. You might find yourself on a terrorism blacklist for some reason that might not even be anything to do with
being a terrorist. Well, a no-fly list. I mean, yeah. There's over a million people now on the no-fly list, women, children, all sorts of stuff, all under this sort of Patriot Act nonsense.
And it's high, and this is, and I'm not exaggerating here at all. If there's another spate of terrorist attacks and they had a system like this in place, wouldn't they think about doing cash freezes for people who might be found to be on a blacklist? Yeah, it's for the safety of the nation. If you're on one of those blacklists, you're just not going to get paid until we've actually vetted you out, and you're going to have to report to the camps. You
now,
know,
for all you Aussies out there. When England does something, or when the states do something, it always ends up coming back to Australia. We end up emulating a lot of the things that happen in the UK. Now, we're not saying that this will happen straight away. This is, again, another teaser thing. Like, for instance, Bill Clinton signed an executive order that to take blood samples so you can get a driver's license back when he's in power. Now, the American government's actually proposing that as an actual thing. So they leak these sort of things out there and make you feel comfortable, make you feel like, ooh, all upset about it. They'll leave it alone for a few years, then boom, it'll happen.
And people have got to get out of this headspace that they think that just because the government's talking about it and proposing it, that then they won't do it, that it's just rhetoric. I mean, this came up in one of the video interviews I did in the street, and one of the guys that I interviewed carried on like he's, you know, Mr. Smarty Pants, saying that this was about the internet censorship regime. And he said, oh, yeah, they just like to talk about it to big note themselves, but they'll never do it. And so I said, so does that mean we should never engage in activism, just sit back and do nothing? And he said, yeah, just sit back and do nothing. You know, that was the mindset of someone randomly I spoke to on the street and who thought he was pretty smart, who thought he knew about this stuff. But see, that is a delusional kind of ignorant mindset. Think that, because when these people in power write up papers, white papers that are fully documented with all the plans in force, don't you think that they are planning to do it? If you don't, you are such a fool. That's all I can say. It's like when they continually talk about the next war that they want to have. And, you know, we've heard all this talk about, you know, attack on Iran. Well, anyone who thinks that it's just talk is an idiot. Because that's what they do when they actually are planning to have a war. You just don't know when they're going to do it, right? Now, if they're planning to seize all of the income of every business in the UK, if they've put that in a document, then you better believe that's actually what they're going to do, right?
Well, folks, on the other angle of this, you know, they're going on and on about how the recession is over. Ooh, we've all got out. Thank God we gave the banks, the private banking elite, billions, trillions of dollars. Thank God, because now the recession's over. Well, guess what, folks? It's not. In fact, it's worse. It's getting to a depression. And this is just another case of the desperate measures that they're going to get more tax. I mean, this is exactly, if you look back through history, if you look at the Roman Empire, this is exactly how it works. They get more desperate for taxes. They start doing extraordinary measures to collect taxes. And that what eventually will happen is that it'll become so expensive to run a business that, you know, because there's so much tax invasion onto you that you end up going bankrupt, you end up going on the dole. And indeed, then you're part of the control grid. Then you're part of the system. You can't. You're totally vulnerable. You need the government to survive. This is typical. So, again, I think this is a very a bright illumination of why we are going deeper in recession, and that the power brokers are scared, and they're trying to set up more grids to take your taxes.
And look, we know, folks, that the UK is gone broke. I mean, we know that the UK is virtually bankrupt. And, you know, that's why this idea is going to appeal to a lot of the people in the you know, the grey people that run the public servants, the banking system in the UK, because it's going to give them all this money. I mean, imagine you've got all this money, even if it only stays in there temporarily, it's going to just flood the, I mean, there's going to be some government bank that's set up to handle, you know, 40 million paychecks. I mean, that's going to be trillions of dollars, right?
Well, it's another way to fund government bonds owing and
I mean,
municipal bonds.
It's obviously a grab. It's obviously a type of theft what they're doing. It's brutal, and it just reminds me of the Nazis. It reminds me of the mentality of just the brutal theft of power, the jackboot in the human face, as George Orwell put it. You know. This is actually what this plan is.
It takes people to wake up to the fact that the government isn't there to protect you. You, your family are there to protect you, not the government, not the state. And they are the only ones that can protect you, your friends, your family, the people close to you. When you're giving all this power and money to the state, if someone breaks into your home, I can quite honestly tell you right now, the police won't be there for 20 minutes, half an hour. You're not any more safe by giving governments huge amounts of power. You are more controlled. That's all.
The person that
gives up their freedom for What's the line?
That gives up their freedom for safety, or
will get neither,
and deserves neither. In fact,
and deserves neither. Actually, yeah.
Look, there's just another point I want to make about the way this type of system would actually work in reality, because obviously, what they're actually proposing here is kind of like changing the way all of the businesses do their accounting, right? And the guy in the interview there, which you can listen to from our show notes, is saying that yes, it would make it so much easier for companies. You see, they wouldn't have to employ so many accountants.
Right. They always make it sound so much better, much easier.
But of course, what that means is they're going to sack a whole lot of accountants, right? A lot of people are going to lose their jobs. But
hang on.
Yeah, but there'll be a lot more accountants hired by the government departments.
That's right. Instead of being actual private. You know, jobs where there's market feedback and people will get fired on their merits of how good they are or how bad they are. Instead, all those people will just move to government. They'll be entrenched.
Oh, that would be the most massive bureaucracy. Just multiply what we have now by 100. You know, it's like it would just be this giant mega corporation. The government would become a mega corporation.
Oh, that's right. And look, folks, have you ever tried to get something that is actually owed to you by the state from the state?
Oh, it's virtually,
They treat you like it's not that, like it's their money when it's actually your money. So you're the taxpayer, it's your money. And so imagine trying to get your actual money from them if there's a mistake in the system. Want more money? Yeah. They'll treat you like you're a beggar begging for some money from them instead of actually, it's actually my money and you're entrusted in keeping it until you've taken your, you know, your slice of the pie, you've stolen your slice of the pie.
Exactly. Well, there are tax reform plans here already, and I'm not sure whether this was from Liberals or Labor, but the one of the plans that I know that they were going to bring in was there was going to be bankers. Like a universal tax deduction that everyone could claim, which kind of just makes a joke of the whole concept of a tax deduction. They were just going to say anyone can deduct $1,000. And they and it's like they won't even check that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
and,
folks, why don't they just stop taking it in the first place?
Exactly. And I have to point out that we have already lost so much of our sovereignty over my lifetime, right, in that we've actually allowed the average worker has allowed a situation where your tax is removed from you by your employer, right, which there is no constitutional common law reason why that should occur, even if you agree with the system of taxation, right? Because businesses don't have to do that. Businesses take all the money at the end of the year, they put in a tax return and they pay the government what they owe, right? But the average worker, and that's just 95% of all workers, has the tax taken out and then they've got to beg for it back. And because we've allowed that situation to become normalized, we're much more vulnerable now to letting it actually go to that next level. And I think we've got to realize that what we've already done, where they take the superannuation, you know, which is really your own savings, but they take it from you without your say-so. You've got no control over it. It's like it's for your savings, but they control it for you. How did we allow that? It's just that's so tyrannical. We allowed that back in, and that only came in about 1991. Do you see what's happened over my lifetime?
This whole thing also has created this massive distortion in the speculation markets. So
all this superannuation money just pouring in.
Just
people
slashing
about. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And CEOs literally cannot make long-term decisions now. So, you get in there as a CEO, you try to make a long-term decision that might drive the stock price down for a couple of weeks because it's a long-term thing, but for the long-term, you've got a vision. You'll get fired like that because instantly the massive money floating around through from speculation. See, there's a difference between speculation and investors, folks. An investor will look at a CEO, actually do some research. Oh, yeah, this is a good guy. He's trying to make this company good in the long-term. I'm going to put some money in and hopefully for the long-term. No, speculators just run in there. They go, "Ooh, I think it's going to go up today. This thing's going to go down." And the stock exchange really wasn't designed for this sort of massive millions and billions and trillions of dollars of speculation money just slashing about the place. And really, it makes it very hard for CEOs to make any long-term decisions. And as soon as they do, they'll just be fired. They'll be on the streets. They'll never be hired again. And it takes a lot of study to be a CEO. So you're not going to risk that sort of stuff. So instead, all these people are doing these pump and dump schemes with these companies. But I'm sort of going off to the side. But again, this is typical of top-down manipulation of what they think is good for you, and it creates all these unseen problems in financial markets and all sorts of things. So to think that a top-down tyrannical sophisticated scientific tyranny is actually going to keep people safe and work in the best interests of you and your family is ridiculous.
Absolutely. And look, on that note, I'm just going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. We're going to just have a bit of music here. We're doing a fairly short show tonight. We'll be right back.
What a song.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Yes, indeed, what a song. Muse there, Uprising. Great.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, great sort of stirring kind of call to action. Muse, of course, is coming to Sydney in November, I think, of this year. And they're strong supporters of the truth movement, as far as I know. I mean, they've got links to Prison Planet and Alex Jones on their website.
Mm.
So, yeah, really, you know, we're moving into a new phase of struggle, I think, Josh, where more people who are actually part of, you know, sort of more part of the enfranchised, but who are realizing that they're going to be disenfranchised, you know what I mean? Like, people who've got more power now are seeing what's happening and realizing that there's a struggle coming, that they've actually got to start to, because this organ, this out of control cancerous organ called government is just taking everything, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, and to go on to that, to continue where you're talking about a struggle, I think it's becoming less of a struggle. I think the way the real struggle is within ourselves to say, hey, we're not alone. Because when I started talking about 9/11 truth, you know, 6-7 years ago,
yeah,
it was very strange. It's everyone that I came across was like, "Whoa, what are you?" You know, and as I'd be sort of divulging the science behind it, you know, I'd break through and say, "Look, just look at the science. Let's deconstruct it. Let's look at the laws of physics. Let's look at what hundreds of architects and engineers, now thousands, folks,
yeah,
are saying about these towers falling." And now it's anyone that I talk to, they're like, "Oh yeah, yeah, I know all about that. Totally. Oh, the Americans are blowing themselves up."
Yeah, it's really changed. I've noticed it. And it's a general change in people are losing trust. Like, I think a lot of the attitude you had before was people just trusted the government, or they trusted what the big media was telling them, and they didn't really think about it. They didn't go into it very far, and they acted sort of amazed or offended by what you're saying, because it challenged their thinking, you know what I mean? Challenged their beliefs. Now people are kind of, the average person's going, yeah, they lie to us all the time. So, you know, they might as well have lied to us about that. You know,
the Aussies intrinsically have a distrust of government. I mean, all the time when I was growing up, I was like, don't trust the pollies. Nah, I never trust a polly. As soon as they open their mouth, they're like, how do you know when a polly's lying? They open their mouth. You know, this sort of rhetoric. And coming from, you know, the way that we were created, Australia was created, white Australia, was we're all prisoners, you know, apart from the ones in Adelaide and South Australia who came here wantingly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there is this ingrained mistrust of government in general. And I mean, you know, and the Aboriginals, absolutely. The poor Aboriginal Australians who really suffered with tyranny. I mean, they are the only ones who really, truly understand tyranny, because they had their children stolen from them. They had, you know, smallpox and diseases thrown onto them. They were jailed and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So, you know, and I think a lot of Australians, white Australians, or haven't really, they don't really understand that that's sort of been lost in their gluttony of goods and services the next iPod and what's on TV and this sort of feathering your own nest. You've sort of lost track of what actually is government tyranny. I mean, you know, the Brits in the 1940s knew what tyranny was, because it was just across the border.
Yeah, and I can tell you what the government here is doing in Central Australia to the Indigenous population is some of the worst forms of tyranny that we've ever seen. And you know, it's going under the radar, but I've mentioned it on this show before, and I'm going to be bringing you an interview with a guy who actually exposed some of the most outrageous, egregious lies that were perpetrated to support the what they call the intervention, you know, which is just this, it's just, you know, it's just jackbooted thuggery, basically. That's what it is. But anyway, sorry, please continue.
I totally agree. And a lot of the Aboriginal elders are saying, you know, just stop with this liberal mindset already. A lot of them are saying, we don't want your money. We don't want to have the dole anymore. We don't want this socialized care, brackets, inverted commas, that you guys are giving us, because it's just creating violence.
Yeah.
Again, you know, there's child violence, there's violence against elders. It's really horrific. And now they're just going in there and doing these crazy things. And again, they're almost like a test population. We have them saying, well, if you're going to get the dole now, you're only going to get these vouchers that you can spend.
Yeah.
So you can only use it on food. Now, everyone that goes, oh, well, that sounds good, because, you know, it's them over there and all this awful stuff that they get up to, and they're all drunks and all this sort of ridiculous rhetoric, you know, this ridiculous notions that people have.
Yeah.
And so you go, okay, well, that's fine. So, but what does it actually do? Well, it creates monopolies within stores, because you can only spend these things at Woolworths or Coles or whatever. You know, you can't spend it at your local little deli or anything like that.
And it erodes the sovereignty of the individual. It definitely does.
And now they're openly talking about rolling that out for the rest of Australia.
Yeah, and that's to prove that it's not racist. That's how they responded to the charge that these policies were racist. They said, well, we're just going to make everyone live under that system. See, we're not racist. And it's a good point, and people need to realize this is no longer just an argument about racism. And, you know, racism only is an excuse quite often for economic exploitation anyway. But basically, the racial part of that program was a test ground. I believe it was purely a test ground, and that's exactly what they want to do. Yeah, they want to roll it out.
It's a complex system to set up. It's not easy to set up a voucher system that everyone, you know, where money, you put money into a holding account. You need a whole lot of infrastructure set up to do this.
Well, of course, ultimately it would be a smart card system, and ultimately it would be an RFID chipped card. And ultimately, it can be an RFID chip that's implanted in your body. The steps to go from one to the end result,
and folks,
are not many.
This is where the big conspiracy. Sorry to interject there.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is where it gets to the big conspiracies, because Australia is only one tier in a new global, new world order system. You have it tiered down from the top, where you're controlled, by your local government. You're controlled by your local system, but they're then controlled further up the top. So it's this huge, pyramid, and this whole notion that this whole motion that they're putting forth in the UK to take your money is going to be a global one as well.
Indeed. And look, I just want to move on with another story, but it's because we're in a pretty hard-hitting mode tonight, and we're basically really, I mean, we're just, cutting the fluff, okay? And there's an article here that was published at Prison Planet, and I promised myself I would read it because I really thought it was actually quite an important article by Paul Joseph Watson. And what this gets into is the way in which everything we've just been talking to up to now is actually part of a mindset which is now the environmentalist, extreme environmentalist mindset. Why is that? Because the extreme environmentalist mindset has an idea that human individuality must be totally suppressed. Human individuality must be surrendered to the greater cause, the collective good, right?
Yeah.
And that becomes, in practice, this bloated government that becomes pure tyranny, right? But you actually have people who are environmentalists who we thought were warm and fuzzy, and I always thought they were. Like, I thought environmentalists were lovely tree-hugging, warm and fuzzy people, right? But the eco-fascists are becoming, they're showing their true colours now. And this article was written by Paul Watson. Global warming alarmist calls for eco-gulags to re-educate climate deniers. Finnish philosopher says oppressive and brutal government should exert tireless control of citizens in shocking insight into threat of eco-fascism movement. Linkola, his name is, openly calls for Nazi-style mass extermination policies to kill defectives. Now, this article seems quite extreme. It seems like a bit of hyperbole in here. I did actually go and read the Wikipedia page of this guy, and I've done a little bit of background on it. There's a bit of hyperbole in the writing of the article, but a lot of the points in it are actually completely accurate. A Finnish environmental guru has gone further than any other global warming alarmist in openly calling for fascism as a necessary step to save the planet from ecological destruction, demanding that climate change deniers be re-educated in eco-gulags and that the vast majority of humans be killed, with the rest enslaved and controlled by a green police state, with people forcibly sterilized, cars confiscated, and travel restricted to members of the elite. Now, look, Paul may have over-dramatized some of that, but I think it's fine because we need to over-dramatize it so people realize just the base level of the threat that we're already under.
Look, the Greens always cite the Finnish utopia, the Finnish model of the socialist utopia. And it's no wonder that you get, I mean, in Finland, basically, you get everyone gets a free university degree. Well, it's not actually free; it's paid for by all the taxpayers. Taxes are ridiculously high over there, and so all these people are going to universities, just studying any old thing that they find fun.
Yeah,
and so there's all these ridiculously educated people who sit there, and because it's all free, so they love the state because they've given them this free thing, and they sort of become these professional students.
And that's why they idiotically might call themselves eco-fascists.
Yeah.
Proudly, you know, call themselves, because they're morons that have lived in a system where they feel privileged in some way to be that.
Finland has basically got hardly any tradespeople over. The trades are going through the roof in price, as they would economically, because there's hardly anyone going to the trades anymore, because everyone's getting these ridiculous arts degrees that don't have any sort of meaning in the real world. And you get these other people studying things like this gentleman, and just then they come out as some sort of crap authority, proclaiming that this is the answer, having forced inoculations, forced killings, you know, gulags for climate deniers.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a greenie, folks. I don't want to live in a world that is full of smog and crap. I don't want to live in a world where there's no rivers and there's no nice oceans to swim in and there's no beautiful bush to walk through. I want to live in all this. But there is no point exterminating the individual who actually will make – I mean, if it wasn't for Steve Irwin privately buying up thousands of acres of land, what would happen? Why was he doing that? Because he was scared the government was going to do these start chopping down trees, start using it for who knows what, and start exploiting the nature that he was buying. Because, you know, if you studied a lot of economics, you'll see that socialized common ground usually gets exploited.
Absolutely. And look, Josh, you've just reminded me of a really important story, which I have to play a video clip here because this is really unknown. This has had zero media exposure, and it is a story exactly of the kind you're describing, or it's a little different, but it's about a family in Western Australia who have been absolutely crushed by environmental extremism through the petty bureaucratic enactment of policies that also had a personal edge to it, you know, with actual people in the local government determined to destroy this one family business, which was actually a cattle business. And what's really tragic about this is that there are so few independent farmers left, right? Mm. And that this what happened to this family is actually part of the corporatizing of the entire agricultural area, so that it's only giant corporations, and yet you'd read the story and you wouldn't see that as an agenda behind it, but that's the outcome of it. And I'll just play you the video, because it's really quite heartbreaking, and I only discovered it by accident because I happened to visit Joanne Nova's blog.
Yeah,
and she's a very prominent Australian climate skeptic who I strongly recommend, joannenova.com.au. Get over there and check it every day, because she's just doing amazing work. And she's the only person out there who's actively actually AgMates, I think, is another site that's promoting this. But AgMates, unfortunately, has a paywall. You can't actually get into the site, which is very unfortunate. I think they should have a rethink about that, because this is a really important story. So I'll just kick off the video here. And we can have a chat about it.
It is our hope that our story will shed some light on the true scope of the problem with environmental extremism, greenhouse gas abatement measures, and the erosion of private property and free speech rights. We immigrated from the United States to Western Australia after purchasing land in 2001 for the sole purpose of building a beef cattle feedlot south of the regional wheat belt town of Narrogin, 2.25 hours inland from Perth. Since childhood, we had dreamed of coming to Australia. We came with our own life savings and hope for our future in the obviously wonderful country of Australia. There was opportunity in the wheat belt of Western Australia. There is a beautiful climate, good quality cattle, and millions of tons of grain currently being exported. We came to live. We and our 4 young children, 3 of whom have been born in the local hospital, are all now Australian citizens. We took much care and spent significant time in planning the site-specific feedlot project from an environmental, an animal welfare, and a financial perspective.
Upon submitting the final plan to relevant authorities, we were on hold for over a year getting our approvals. We're not sure what the Department of Environment did during that year. The local authority, the Shire of Narrogin, required us to give an open public meeting outlining our proposal to the public. They asked for written submissions and received an overwhelming positive response, while a few were adamantly opposed. Still today, after 8 years, the vast majority of the public supports the project, while a small group adamantly opposes it. There is a high degree of interest in our development, mostly from people that are interested in economic activity and ensuring that our community grows and thrives with real, productive businesses, providing a base for that local sustainability.
The first post went into the ground at Narrogin Beef Producers in February of 2003, and the first cattle went on feed in June of that year. The concept proved to work very well in our location and climate, and the facility and business expanded to a holding capacity of 10,000 head of cattle. Complaints, usually based on odor, against our facility were made almost from the beginning. There is a 12,000 head intensive piggery directly adjacent to our property, which had been there for 20 years, and about which this same group of complainants had bitterly complained prior to our purchase. In July of 2007, we presented our plans for the final stage of development up to the originally planned and approved 15,000 head to an open public meeting attended by 120 people. We were given a rousing ovation.
As president of the WA Lot Feeders Association, I attended a meeting on the 17th of May 2007 between environmental departments, environmental groups, and industry to discuss transitioning the National Pollutant Inventory, or NPI, system to the National Environmental Protection Measures, or NEPM, system, and including so-called greenhouse gases in the required reporting regime. The meeting was supposed to be an open forum on this topic. At this meeting, I questioned the inclusion of greenhouse gases in the new reporting and expressed doubt about the entire theory of anthropogenic global warming. I handed out copies of the Great Global Warming Swindle DVD, as well as papers from the Lavoisier group to support my assertions. I did not expect those that convened the meeting to agree, or even the majority in attendance to necessarily agree with my point of view. I did, however, expect that I would be able to state my views without fear of retaliation.
Look, I'll just pause it there because it's quite a long story, and I'll put both videos up on our show notes. But from that point there, the story gets really dark, and that they basically just turn on these people, and after giving them all the assurances and after they've already invested millions in this irreversibly with bank loans and stuff, they basically are told that they have to scale back their operation to a much smaller number, which means they can never generate the cash flow to repay their loans, and they are now and this video was made about a year ago. Since then, they've exhausted all the legal processes and they've lost everything. And their manager, the guy who was actually the manager of their farm, committed suicide. Are you there, Josh? Looks like we've lost Josh.
No, here I am. Sorry.
Yeah.
You're
fine.
On mute while that was going on. Oh, that is really a shocking, shocking story, Harold. And
yeah, I was just saying that that if you listen to part one and part two, when it gets into part two, the manager of the farm actually commits suicide.
Yeah, that's terrible.
But the way in which these greenhouse gas abatement policies can be used to target individuals is a classic case of the pettiness of tyranny. You know, the pettiness of centralized, you know, ridiculous ideological systems. I mean, like, you can go back to look at Soviet Russia or, you know, other examples of when ideology just becomes this dominant thing that can then be used to, I mean, he clearly says there that his problems actually started when he said he was a skeptic. Now, that may be a coincidence. I don't know. But this is the type of thing that does happen: persecution of people for their views in a bureaucratic totalitarian type system does occur.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, this is happening all over the place in the country. This isn't just a one-off.
No, it's not, and that's really important to stress as well. Yeah, it's not a one-off.
I've just read a really well. That was. Happening, I quickly glanced over a Facebook, and you know, another friend of a friend of mine, whose brother died after getting a vaccination.
Oh, really?
I mean, these things also happen constantly, and then the doctor tried to turn around to say that the parents murdered the child. You know, and
they do that a lot. Yeah, they love that. They love that when. You know, when there's a problem and it's clearly a medical problem, often caused by you know, negligence or the drugs that they've prescribed, then they'll blame the caregiver or the parent or
And then you know they went to another independent doctor, who basically said that hundreds of kids die each year because of vaccination and
really he said
because
that?
Their bodies just can't
he admitted
an
that?
Immune system can't handle. The viruses and the massive amount of toxic shock.
The doctor admitted that hundreds of kids die every year.
Yeah,
I'd love to get that. You know, on a microphone. I mean, it's so hard to get them to admit anything, isn't it?
It really is. It's you know, it's systemic. And it's also all the way down because people are liable.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of vaccine stories here from just the last week. This one was published in The Age, Vaccine Worse Than the Flu. Now, this is now confirmed. This is not a conspiracy theory, ladies and gentlemen. This is now confirmed. The swine flu vaccine was worse than the flu, okay?
Yeah.
Public health experts have called for an independent body to actively monitor drug safety after it emerged that young children were more likely to end up in hospital because of the side effects from a leading flu vaccine than they were from the illness itself. Okay?
Yeah, now, totally. The British Medical Journal and the EU Commission said that the H1N1, you know, was basically they've admitted that it was all a big fraud. And it was to you know, get big payoffs. Correct. Lobbying government
an investigation
vaccine.
Has shown that there were close ties between members of the World Health Organization and the vaccine manufacturers. But this latest report, which is from Australia, is actually even more concise in that they're actually saying that your risk of getting sick from the vaccine was greater than your risk of actually getting sick from having the flu. Because the flu was really mild, you know what I mean? Like the flu season we had last year was quite mild, but the vaccine reactions were very severe.
I'll tell you what wasn't mild was the massive scaremongering around the swine flu. I mean, it was just insane. And folks, you all know, we don't have to remind you. But the thing is, a lot of people just forget, instantly forget. They get onto the next thing. They don't remember any sort of history, even if the history was only last year. You know, they just go, the swine flu was never really that big of an issue.
Yeah, correct. And you know, governments all around the world are continuing to run away, to hide and to lie and dissemble about the facts. And I've actually got another video, believe it or not, lined up here, and I'm just going to play. Hopefully we can get through this one.
I don't believe you.
It is actually quite interesting. Feds settle vaccine lawsuit and seal results. Now, this will blow your mind. Okay, yeah. Here we go.
A federal court has awarded $1.5 million to the family of a little girl who developed autism-like symptoms after receiving 5 vaccinations in one day. Hannah Poling was less than 2 years old when she got the shots, which were meant to protect her against 9 diseases. And her parents say immediately after she developed a fever, seizures, and severe health problems. Her parents filed a claim with what's known as the Federal Vaccine Court.
I wanted to know why my daughter, who had been completely normal until getting 9 vaccines in one day, was suddenly no longer there.
Well, the suit was filed in 2002. 6 years later, the government conceded the vaccines aggravated a cell disorder no one knew Hannah had and left her with permanent brain damage and autistic-like symptoms. This summer, the court agreed on the amount that would be paid to the family. That amount was announced today. Karen DeSoto is a defense attorney and former prosecutor. So, Karen, the natural question is, you have parents who, despite research and science, who believe that their child's autism is linked to vaccines. Does this open the door for litigation for them?
Oh, my God. Well, Tamron, there's already 4,800 cases in the vaccine court, in federal vaccine court. The test cases so far up until this case, the cases that were tried were lost. So it really looked like there was going to be no medical evidence to link autism with the vaccines. However, this puts a huge chink in the armor of the government. But Tamron, I think one of the most disturbing things about this case is that the government did in fact settle, but now the case has been sealed. So yeah. I think that's a very disturbing factor that everybody in America really wants to know, hey, if this is a public safety concern and this was because there was a cell disorder or the amount of shots, then shouldn't you tell us who have children who are getting our kids vaccinated?
Did the judge explain or what would be the thinking behind sealing this, as you point out, information that could be potentially valuable to parents?
Right. Well, listen, Tamron, you know, autism is such a problem. There are so many children. It's an epidemic. So sealing anything that could give you a clue as to when, why, or how, I think is wrong, and it is a public safety issue, and therefore unseal it. The government is using tax dollars to pay for compensation and damages in this case. Don't we have the right to know what this case is about? And hiding it begs the question, what is the government hiding?
I'll just leave it there. I think the point there is very clear. Aside from whatever the facts may be, whether she did really have an unusual disorder that preempted the autism, why does the government seal the results so that no one else can investigate the case? No one else can know what really happened, what actually said. I mean, what that means is you don't know what was actually said. You don't know what evidence was presented. You don't know what the arguments were. So you can't use it as a precedent for anything. Why would they do that?
What's with having a vaccine court?
Yeah, why do they have to have a special vaccine court? It's a corrupt. It's
a
criminal.
It's a corrupt scam, folks. And the drug companies that are creating these vaccines, and there's only a few of them, it's a small handful, elite group, basically have got they've got signed government papers that give them basically immunity from any litigation.
Correct. Correct.
For the free vaccines that get handed out.
Yeah. So. Look, it's just it's look. What can I say? When we every week we just in these stories. This is a new one, by the way. This is these are all new stories we brought to you tonight. Like we're not just rehashing old news, right?
No. Sorry, when I say free vaccines, by the way, folks, I just want to really point this out that this is a mind game. It's not free. There's companies making billions of dollars, if not trillions, globally, with vaccines. They are not free. They are paid for by your taxes.
Correct, correct. And you know, just point out as well, and I was talking about this last week with Sonia from Canada, that this concept of productivity, you know, it's like, well, they give vaccines when you're at work for free because there's some concept that you're not going to get sick and therefore you're going to be more productive and that's kind of the justification, but it's a giant scam in a way. And I think it's a giant scam that the pharmaceuticals are perpetuating on businesses to run that argument. Because, I mean, like people, some people take their sick days, other people don't. I mean, I don't work in a job where I'm actually paid my sick days. But, I mean, I can perfectly understand someone who wants to take their sick days, right? You know, even if they're not, you know, at death's door, they're still going to want to have a few days off when they're not feeling that great. And this is so important to understand this, is that in a normal working life, especially when you go to work every day, day in, day out, month after month, of course you're going to get unwell every now and then. And to think that you're going to just eliminate that, and why would you want to eliminate that? People need to have their timeouts when they get run down because of the stress and because of the boredom and all this stuff.
I would
they
say
need to
you're
have
more
it.
Productive after having a day off.
Yeah, you need it.
If you're not,
you need your sick days, and you know it's you don't have to be at death's door to take a sick day. You just if you're not feeling that great and you wake up with one of those terrible feelings of like, oh, I'm heavy and I just want to sleep. Well, sometimes you should actually just listen to that body signal, right? Yeah. And then don't go to work, right? Yeah. Just call in sick, and then you won't actually get sick. See, this is the point.
Oh but, no, you've got to soldier on with Codral.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to just pop a pill and you just got to, even if you're totally fluey and you've got phlegm everywhere, you just pop a pill and head straight to work, folks.
Yeah, and if you do that, you will end up getting quite sick, you know, down the track at some point when it all builds up and the toxins from the drugs that you've been taking build up, then you'll start to get really sick.
Oh yeah, then eventually your cancer starts and your immune system's too weak to fight the cancer.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it. That's
look, it. And if big pharmaceuticals and governments really cared about your health, they wouldn't be passing stuff like this. This is another headline. Big pharma scores big win. Medical herbs will disappear in EU.
Right.
And big pharma has almost reached the finish line of its decade-long battle to wipe out all competition as of April 1st, 2011, less than 8 months from now. Virtually all medical herbs will become illegal in the European Union. The approach in the United States is a bit different, but it is having the same devastating effect. The people have become nothing more than sinks for whatever swill big pharma and agribusiness choose to send our way, and we have no option but to pay whatever rates they want. This is an article. It's amazing. It's an amazing read. We should put it up on the show notes.
That's a very disturbing story. I had a quick read of that earlier. And, it is quite alarming that this has happened. And it looks like this is another one of these cases where they've kind of snuck it in earlier than they actually implemented it, because it said in there that the first time it was instituted as a policy was in 2004. But now they've actually enforced the policy. So
I mean, folks, they're getting so egregious. Governments are now passing, like in the States, they're trying to pass a law that you need a license. Folks, get this straight. You need a license to have a garden if you're going to eat anything out of that garden. You know, it's getting so ridiculously controlling that, you know, people have just got to go, what the?
Oh, in Western Australia, you're going to be fined if you have an umbrella that's too large on the beach. I'm not kidding. It was in one of the Facebook feeds here. They're also going to have laws against taking photographs on the beach. It's already virtually impossible to take photographs on the beach because they immediately assume you're a pedophile. But they're actually going to legislate now that it's actually illegal to take photographs on the beach, just to ram it home, just that extra bit. You know?
Yeah, you know, it sucks that I've just gone out there and bought a waterproof camera.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, you're a dirty pedophile.
Yeah, of course. You know, if you want to take pictures of the ocean and beautiful, most pristine. I mean, we all live along the coastlines in Australia. We weren't going to want to take pictures of our beautiful coastline.
Oh, but the coastlines are copyrighted. Didn't you know that?
Oh, yeah, that's another problem, isn't it?
The coastline's copyrighted.
Another great article. It's on the Mises.org. In case all of you leftists out there want to read about the Finnish welfare state utopia, read this great article by Kai Grusner, The Bankrupt Finnish Welfare State, and it's a great read.
Sounds excellent.
We'll post that as well because that's a very important.
Yes, indeed.
Folks, if you have a gripe with anything we say, post it. You can leave it on Facebook or you can leave it on truthnews.com.au in the comments of the show.
Yeah, if you have a gripe, if you find us annoying in any way, let us know.
Or if you find us good, give us the thumbs up.
Can I just say, and I've been a bit tardy in replying to this person, I had the most beautiful email that I've ever received on the weekend from Russia. Okay. And I do intend to reply. It's just that I wanted to sit down and actually write the reply properly. I get emails from Russia every now and then, you know, and I think, well, they're probably, you know, scams or spam or whatever. But this one is genuine. And I really am honored that there's a lady in Russia who's a school teacher who's been listening to our show, right? And she sent a photograph of herself with her students, you know, her young students, and they said we love your show, and they want us to send some documents. So the wording was a little bit because the English was not that great, but I got the impression that, you know, you'd like to get some things from us, like maybe a flyer or maybe one of our T-shirts, and I'm actually going to put together something to send you because I was really touched by that email.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, yeah. G'day, yeah. Russia, from down
yeah,
under.
Yeah, yeah, g'day, Russia. Yeah, I hope you get this message.
Mm. All right, folks. Great. Well, till next week.
Yeah, till next week. Stay with it. May the force be with you.
And you, Harold.
Yeah, cheers.